We're live.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the study session of the University City City Council meeting to order. Prior to turning the agenda over to Mr. Rose, are there any changes to the regular session agenda to be proposed by members of council? Hearing none, Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and council members, this agenda item asks that you receive a presentation on the proposed changes to our pension plans, both uniform and non-uniform, and provide direction. Changes are being proposed to strengthen the plans and to make them more attractive for retaining and recruiting employees. And I believe we have Keith, our finance director. Would you like to introduce this item and our speaker?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Rose. Honorable Mayor and members of council, we have Heather Mehta from Greensfelder to come and present the proposed changes to the pension plan. Thanks.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor and members of the council. So we have sort of two different categories of proposed changes that we're going to discuss tonight. The first one arose with we noticed it when a particular individual, a lieutenant who had left the city on disability, when he died and his family inquired about death benefits in the plan. And we realized that what the plan said when he became disabled was slightly different than what it said today. And so we went back and sort of looked at the drafting history of that and why that happened. And under the plan prior to 2015, if someone became disabled, they were entitled, if they had the proper years of service, to have a early or normal retirement benefit. In 2015, my predecessor, Tom Mugg, was reviewing the plan because the disability you have an insurance policy for as well. And he was taking a look at the insurance policy and realized that with the insurance policy, anytime someone was receiving pension benefits under the plan, it was offsetting what was being paid from the insurance policy by those benefits. So if someone was entitled to $1,000 a month of disability benefits under the insurance contract, but was also receiving, say, an early retirement from the pension plan of $500, then the insurance policy was only going to pay $500. So to make sure the insurance policy was the primary payer for people's disability benefits, the plan was amended to say that people who left on disability were no longer entitled to early retirement benefits. But because of the way the plan was drafted and the cross-references within the plan, this removed the ability for a long service employee who became disabled, who had enough years to elect early retirement, to be able to have death benefits. So the first set of proposed changes are really just to sort of put that back into place. So if we have a long-serving member of our uniform team who has worked for 20 years and becomes disabled, they would have the ability to have death benefits for a surviving spouse and funeral benefits when they later die. This change was really just about kind of fixing what we would sometimes call in the pension world a Scrivener's error, because the intent of that 2015 amendment was not to remove the death benefits. It was just to ensure that if someone was receiving disability benefits under the insurance contract, that we were not going to pay out of the pension fund and therefore deplete that fund when we already had this insurance policy over here that should be paying for those benefits. But accidentally, because the death benefits provisions all say that someone who retires under either early retirement or normal retirement is entitled to funeral benefits and death benefits, when we remove the ability for someone on disability to have early retirement benefits, we also remove the ability for them to have death benefits, which we viewed as an inadvertent omission, like I said, a Scrivener's error. So that is the first document. This would be proposed changes to the police and firefighters plan. I know that there are two of them that are labeled that. This one. Sorry, I'm pulling it up on my screen as well. This one is the one that begins with changes to section 130.190. So the changes that we proposed are in bold here. So all this would be doing is, in addition to those people who retire on early retirement or normal retirement, if we have someone who is credited with at least 20 years of service and who retires on disability, that they would be able to get the same funeral benefits and death benefits for a surviving spouse or child as people who retire on early or normal retirement. Any questions? So the other two amendments, the one to the uniform plan and the one to the police and firefighters plan, are all about what Mr. Rose mentioned earlier, trying to think of ways to make the plan more attractive to recruiting and retaining employees, particularly in this situation, retaining employees within University City who may be considering transferring positions between a uniform and non-uniform position, or bringing back good employees who have left the city for another position that we'd like to rehire with the city. So under the plan as it is, well, the two plans actually, as they are currently written, two important things that we're kind of focusing on here. One, if you have an employee who serves in both capacities, uniform and non-uniform, like for example, someone who is a dispatcher and becomes a uniform police officer, there is no provision in either plan to recognize that service with the city under the other plan. And for this, we particularly are just targeting vesting. So in a pension plan, you have credited service, which is how you calculate someone's benefit. You look at their years of service times their salary and you come up with a benefit. But there's also something called vesting service, which is just how many years you have been somewhere to earn a right to your benefit. So the way the plan is currently written, we could have someone who worked the plans for, say, 8 years as a dispatcher and another 12 years as a uniform police officer for a total of 20 years, but not have a vested benefit under either plan, because the non-uniform plan currently requires 10 years of service in the non-uniform capacity, and the uniform plan currently requires 20 years of service. And so when we discussed this in a small group and then later among the boards, we thought it would be more fair to employees that if they wanted to transfer positions, that we would give them vesting service with any work that they did with the city. It would not impact the way the benefit was calculated. Like if you had 10 years of service under the uniform plan and 5 under the non-uniform, you wouldn't get 15 years total for credited service. So it's not going to affect the amount. It just affects whether they're entitled to a benefit or not. So in that 5 and 10 example, you might have someone who has a small benefit based on just 5 years of service in the non-uniform plan. And technically, if they only had 15 years, they wouldn't vest in the uniform plan under the rules as written. So one of the changes we are looking into is regarding vesting for people who work in different positions within the university system, both as University City system, as uniform and non-uniform employees. The other changes we are looking at deal with rehired employees. So someone who leaves either as an officer or as a non-uniform employee and comes back. Because currently in the plan, if you did not vest, if you didn't have 10 years of service for a non-uniform employee or 20 years of service as a uniform employee, then you receive your contributions to the plan, but you lose your entitlement to any kind of monthly pension benefit. You just get your own money back after you have terminated and have been gone for about a year. And if you were rehired under those circumstances, you don't currently have a way to build upon that service that you already had with the city. So if you had 8 years of service in a non-uniform role, well, actually, bad example. Oh, yeah, no, that's a good example, because you would not be vested. So you have 8 years of service in a non-uniform role. You terminate, you're gone for 5 years. You've received your contributions from the city and you come back and you could work another 8 years, but you would never have an actual pension benefit because you didn't vest under either of those 8 years of service, even though you worked with the city for 16 years, which is a pretty long career to have these days with one employer. So the idea would be that under those circumstances, if you terminated before you vested and you received your contributions, that you could buy back your service by returning those contributions plus interest to either of the plans. This is a fairly common provision in governmental plans, particularly the state-run plans like PERS or PSRS allows you to buy back service if you terminate and rehire. So we're not talking about something completely novel here. It's a fairly standard provision in some other plans, not all plans, but some plans. And for someone who has already earned a vested benefit, so someone who worked at least 10 years in the uniform plan, currently when that individual is rehired, they start all over. So they would have a pension benefit based on their 10 years, but if they worked another 8 years, all they would get for that service is a return of their contributions when they retired. So the idea would be instead to combine that service. So if you have someone who's worked 10 years invested, when they rehire, they would start building on that pension benefit so that when they retire with, in my example, the total of 18 years of service, they would get their benefit calculated based on 18 years of service instead of only having a pension benefit based on 10 years of service and a return of 8 years of contributions. Again, the goal with these amendments would just be to make it more attractive for an employee who has left the city to come back. We're not talking about a huge group of people based on what Mr. Rose and Mr. Cole have told me, but maybe that number would grow if people saw it as a more attractive option returning and building on their pension, as I know, particularly for governmental employees, pensions are a very attractive benefit that is hard to find in working in the private sector world. So again, these changes are just proposed changes, and I know that the boards of both plans are interested in looking at other ways that we could make the plans more attractive for recruiting and retention purposes as well. And they have voted to form a subcommittee to explore other potential amendments that could be made to the plan to make it, the plans to make them more attractive in the future. One thing that I should note before asking for questions is that at this moment, the police, the uniform plan is under 80% funded on an actuarial basis. And because of that, at this moment, we cannot pass any amendments that would increase benefits per Missouri statute. Missouri revised statute 105.684 that prohibits benefit increases if the plan is below 80% funded. And based on an actuarial cost study, any improvements would decrease the funding below 76. So since we're not already starting at the 80% level, at this point, we can't make any amendments to the police plan. So I think the goal would be just to come up with a great list of ideas and things we could do to improve the plan, but we will have to wait until a time when the market is better or other forces have caused an increase in funding. And my understanding is the funding right now is not terribly below 80%, but based on where the funding is right now, we technically cannot do any kind of benefit increases per Missouri statute. Any questions?
Mr. Hales.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. So you mentioned the example of somebody working non-uniformed as a dispatcher becoming a police officer. Would it go the other way if you had a police officer that served for 20 years and then wanted to be a dispatcher or some other non-uniform?
That would be the intent of the proposed amendments. And both of them, I believe that's the very last paragraph on both of those two amendments. There's one change that we propose to the uniform plan and one to the non-uniform plan, where we would allow for the crediting of vesting service for anyone who transfers between the two plans. Again, that is just vesting that would allow them to be entitled to a benefit. It wouldn't change how their benefits were calculated under each plan.
The first example you gave, which is actually, I think, a real life example where we had the, we'll call it the Scrivener's error. How did the matter ever get resolved, or did it? With the And should I not ask that? I'm not going to ask that in executive session. I'm happy to as well. But since that was the example that was given, it seems that we had an employee that was relying on one thing and then the plan had been changed and there was an inadvertent change made. I'm just curious.
Well, for one, I believe we discovered that the particular lieutenant does not have a surviving spouse. So there wouldn't be a surviving spouse benefit payable to her regardless. The records that Mr. Mulligan found suggested that they divorced long ago. And Keith, did you ever find out who was trying to claim a funeral benefit? One of the children.
I'm sorry, Keith, you might come up to
someone
the mic.
Might need to, you or at least say, or at least repeat what he said.
I can repeat what Mr. Cole said. We believe one of the children was looking into the possibility of a funeral benefit, but we were still trying to get more information from the attorney about who specifically was claiming the benefit and whether they would be entitled to it, at which point Mr. Mulligan and I were going to meet and confer about whether we thought they plan as it exists or the plan as it exists when he retired would allow any kind of funeral benefit or not to that particular beneficiary.
Okay. And then the next question I have is more maybe on a broader basis. When I was the liaison years ago to the pension board, we would look regularly at the funding levels for our plans versus other municipalities in Missouri. And is that information still out? I'm always curious as to how our funding level is as compared to many of our peers.
The JCPER collects that information and is available online on their website. They have a watch list of all the plans that are below 70% funded, which is not necessarily statutory based. That's just sort of an unofficial thing they do. And any plan that is below 70% funded gets on the watch list. You get off the watch list by having your funding above 70%.
Right.
But there's also an annual report that Keith and everyone sitting in Keith's shoes submits to the JCPER, and you can find those annual reports, kind of a summary of them, on their website.
But isn't there like a one or two pages that talks about the, here's the ones who are at 100%, 95%. I mean, it just kind of ranks everybody, pop, pop, pop. And maybe that report no longer exists. But I just remember us having the opportunity. There were a couple of places, Tim, and this may not still be hold true, but like Maryland Heights, that had the casino revenue coming in, had plenty of revenue so that they were pretty well funded. And there were a couple of other smaller communities that were pretty funded. But then you really had a gap that then came down to those of us who are more in the non-casino business of governing, if you will, to where everyone was kind of lumped together, some slightly above, some slightly below the 80% threshold. I'm just curious if that information is still out there. And we can, I'm sure the city manager and Keith will work through that. And if it's there, I'd like to see it. If not, I understand. Are there other questions? Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. I have a I don't know how many questions I have. You said the uniformed pension is below the 80% level. What about the non-uniform pension plan? What's that level? Do you know that?
I will defer to Keith, but it's my understanding that it is above 80% funded. Mr. Cole, do you have a better answer?
Councilman Cusick. It is above 80%. I don't know the exact percentage, but it's roughly between 80 and 85%, if I recall.
Oh, that was the prior year. It's currently at about 90% plus, based upon the last actuarial study.
So it's at a healthy level then?
It's at a very healthy level.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then that, so I'm assuming that we have a plan to increase the uniform pension plan to bring it back up to the 80% level, or
we are still looking at what the options are for bringing the uniform plan up past the 80% level, but we don't have a concrete funding source at this point. Certainly, we believe that the market at Olive Development will be very helpful as well as the increased revenues that are being generated in cities such as Chesterfield that will also impact the public safety sales tax. So a combination of those two are the things that I will look at first and likely recommend a combination of the two.
Thank you for that. And then there is there any danger of it slipping lower than 80% or going down to the 70% level so that we make it onto that watch list?
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Cusick, currently the uniform plan is at about 76% funded. With our economy, it's difficult to determine whether it will slip, how far it will slip. I think it will be under 76% based upon the next actuarial studies, but that just has to do with investments and how they fluctuate. But if that occurs, then I will bring forward options to the mayor and council that you could take action to bring it back up past the minimum levels. I don't expect it to drop below 70%, but if it did, my intention would be to recommend some options for bringing it back above that amount.
Thank you. And one last question, switching gears. We are non-uniform pension years. Employees are vested after 10 years and uniform are vested after 20 years.
No, I believe it's under the uniform is vested after 10 years.
The uniform is vested after 10 years? And what's non-uniform?
10 years.
So they're both at 10 years. So I think we've had these discussions before, or at some point I remember them, but have we considered reducing the number of years that an employee has to wait before they become vested, or doing a step process where maybe they're vested starting after 5 years, they're vested 25% or 30% and going up by tiers?
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Cusick, one of the options that we are intending to explore is for those that are not civil service. I don't know if Heather may be intending to get to this later on, so I don't want to steal her thunder.
No, go right ahead.
One of the options that we want to explore is that. I think for those that are not civil service that do not have protections built into our system should have a different vesting period because they don't have the benefit of going through a civil service process should disciplinary actions be taken. But I think Heather is intending to talk a little bit about that.
Thank you.
That is one of the proposed changes in the non-uniform amendment would be lowering the vesting age, or not vesting age, sorry, the vesting years to 7, as Mr. Rose said. We looked into comparatively how the vesting in our plans compares to other Missouri governmental plans, again, based on information that JCPER publishes. And our uniform plan is slightly higher than many. Most were more around 5 years. There were a few that were 7.5. And then I think just 2 or 3 other plans, including one out of Kansas City that had 10 years for non-uniform employees. It is much more common for whatever reason for uniform employees to have 10 years of vesting service. Any other questions?
Any other questions? Mr. Rose, anything else on this matter?
Oh, man, I did have one question. Heather, as it relates to the change that you proposed regarding, fixing the, if I'm in the uniform plan for 5 years and I'm in the non-uniform for 5 years and I leave, I still don't have a pension. Would that be able to advance if it's the desire of the mayor and council to do so? Or does that one need to wait until the uniform plan is above 80% funded?
That is an excellent question. And I say that because it's a little bit of a gray area. The Missouri statute that I referred to has been interpreted once by, I believe, the City of St. Louis court system. And they interpreted it in a way that I found to be a little narrow in terms of what a benefit increase is. So as a pension attorney, I would say that yes, lowering your years of vesting or allowing vesting credit for after service could be construed as a benefit increase in the sense that your example, someone with 5 and 5 before they had 0 benefit in each plan, and now they're going to have a benefit in both plans if we did that amendment. So I personally think that could be construed as a benefit increase. The one court case that has interpreted it, though, looked at it very narrowly. That particular case was dealing with a rule of 80 or something like that, based on when someone could start the retirement benefits. And the particular amendment that went into place dropped it so that people could have the same unreduced benefit at an earlier age. And the court interpreted the language in such a way to say that that was not a benefit increase, whereas there were actuaries that testified saying, well, if you're getting the exact same benefit, but you get to start it 5 years earlier, that's definitely a benefit increase because over your lifetime, you've gotten 5 more years of benefits. But even though mathematically the actuaries, and I would agree with them, would construe that as a benefit increase, the court did not. And so there's probably some way you could argue that it's not a benefit increase. As a somewhat conservative lawyer, I would tell you I would probably wait until the funding is a little better before passing it. I doubt that JCPER would come looking after you if you did something that violated the statute, not to mention that I don't think they really have any enforcement arm. Like they couldn't exactly slap your wrist for doing it. And I don't think your participants would be complaining if you increase their benefits, unless it was someone who was very concerned with the funding of the plan, who was not going to be impacted by this and was worried that that would be more likely the plan would not have money for them because you're increasing benefits for other people. So it's probably a low risk move, but at the same time, I personally would construe it as a benefit increase and would recommend waiting until the funding improves, especially given how close you are to that threshold you need.
Honorable Mayor and council members, based upon tonight's discussion, it would be my intention to begin placing items on your agenda for consideration for those proposals that fully meet the state statute requirements, which means that would primarily be for the non-uniform plan, but delaying those for the uniform plan. And what will accompany those items are, if they are a change in the cost of the pension plan, we will be crystal clear as to what those costs would be projected.
Thank you very much.
Very welcome. Thank you all.
To Mr. Rose, do we have time to do, can we do exec? It's on the agenda on the regular session. Can we do, I don't know. Pardon me? Yeah. And we have a half an hour. To me, to my colleagues, is that something that all of you are amenable to, that we go into executive session now? I'm happy for you then to make a motion to, according to Missouri Revised Statute 16.021, to be added to the study session agenda. Am I, is that what you're asking, John? To the study session agenda?
Yes. So the motion would be to take the item Q on the regular agenda and delete it from the regular agenda and add it to the study session agenda.
Is there such a motion? Motion made by Mr. Hales. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Cusick. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of amending the agenda by moving item Q to the study session, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. So now it's on the study session agenda. If we could have a motion to go into closed session, according to Missouri Revised Statute 16.021, legal actions, causes of action, litigation involving a public governmental body and any confidential privileged communications between that governmental body or its representatives or attorney. Is there such a motion? Motion made by Mr. Hales. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. McMahon. Is there a discussion? Hearing none. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Klein.
Aye.
Councilmember Smotherson. Councilmember McMahon.
Aye.
Councilmember Hales.
Aye.
Councilmember Clay. Councilmember Cusick.
Aye.
Mayor Crowe.
Aye. Thank you very much. We will be back about 6:29.